Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition of The Drive. Yes, TGIF, Bill, Coach Don Dunn, who appreciate being in a couple of days earlier this week, back with us here on this Friday. And Drew is in as well as we sort of wrap up the week. We did, as we were talking about yesterday, we do have the SEC media's preseason predictions for order of finish and all conference. We'll talk about that. Love to get your thoughts on that. We didn't run an awful lot of audio here the last couple of days. We've got some more if you want to hear any. No surprise to me that the teams projected to play in Atlanta are the two that played there last year, Georgia and Texas. And mm-hmm. Georgia is picked to win the conference. It's funny because Texas was picked to win it last year.
Right.
And then Georgia knocked off the Longhorns. But Georgia picked to win the SEC this year. And, with the talent that those two teams have returning, not a big surprise, Don.
Not at all. And, I know some people are maybe not mad, but kind of shocked that the rankings came out that we were –
I'm not at all. I mean, Justin Ferguson and I talking about it yesterday, I just felt like that just because of recent history.
Yes.
Auburn not having had a winning season since 2020, and that was a 6-4 season. Auburn hasn't won 7 games since 2019.
Wow.
It's difficult for people. Especially those that aren't close to the program might see sort of what's going on, to just expect when you look at the names of the players that transferred out and right. where they went. I mean, Cam Coleman to Texas, Malik Blockton to LSU, Jake Crawford to Ole Miss, Kayan Lee to Tennessee, and, Jermonte Waddle to Arkansas. It's players – all going all over the SEC, name players for the right. most part, and then Auburn brings in a dozen or so players from South Florida and has 40 new players on the team, but none of them were as high profile as some of those players leaving. So it makes sense. It's mm-hmm. understandable
right.
that people would say, hey, we're not going to rank Auburn very high. Auburn preseason number 12, ahead of here's maybe a bit of a surprise. Vandy is 13. Hmm. Then Kentucky with a first place vote. Kentucky was 14th, but somebody, and gee, let me wild guess at probably a young person there covering yeah. Kentucky, really excited about Will Stein, voted to pick them to win the conference. That's probably the only reason that Kentucky is ahead of Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Mississippi State was 15 and Arkansas picked 16th. But Auburn picked 12th. And look, like I said yesterday, and I'll say it again, that's understandable. That doesn't mean that that's where they're going to finish, because we've seen so many years where a lot of the predictions are just so, so far off. Last year, South Carolina predicted to finish in the top 4 or 5. They finished in the bottom 4. You had Oklahoma predicted to not be so good mm-hmm. last year, and they go to the college football playoff. So we'll run down the preseason projected order of finish. Love to get your thoughts on that. And then we'll look at the all-conference team. Auburn did have 3 players that were selected on the 3 all-conference teams. Xavier Atkins is a preseason first-team all-conference. Well, after being an All-American last year, I would hope that people haven't forgotten, even though he wasn't there with Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Champ Anthony, I thought this was really interesting. Champ Anthony, a preseason first-team prediction. even though right now he's not necessarily a starter
right
at Auburn. But, I mean, that is – that's sometimes what being there at Media Days can do. It puts you in front of the media, and they have – they have that recent memory, and if somebody's right. very impressive, mm-hmm. as Champ is was, you go, oh yeah, we'll vote this kid in.
Yeah.
So and then Alex McPherson, third team. When Alex McPherson is healthy, there aren't two kickers in the SEC. I don't know that there are two kickers in the country better than a healthy Alex McPherson, who is healthy now.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of shocking, but. Yeah, those rankings are just what they are, rankings, and, you know, you can use it as motivation.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know.
I mean, look at and we won't run down the entire preseason all-conference teams, but look at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Lenoris Sellers was your preseason first-team quarterback. Austin Simmons was your number two.
Right.
By midseason, Austin Simmons wasn't starting, and by midseason, South Carolina was on its way to a just an awful season.
Yes,
and those guys were nowhere to be found.
Right.
in the postseason this year, Austin Simmons' replacement, Trinidad Chambliss, is your preseason first team All Conference quarterback ahead of Arch Manning of Texas, and then Gunnar Stockton of Georgia.
Yep.
So I mean, again, it's fun to look at. It's interesting. But again, this is voted on by the folks that were there in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to remember something else to keep in mind is the closest school to where the SEC Media Days was, closest SEC school is Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And then the closest school is South Florida.
Right.
And I don't know that South Florida nor Florida fans are going to be giving Auburn a whole lot of credit.
No.
But on the other hand, I mean, John Sumrall in Florida are picked ninth. So by far the highest of the highest of the new schools, because Auburn picked 12th, Kentucky 14th, Arkansas 16th. And as I said, Kentucky got a first place vote. for first place votes, Georgia got 88 first place votes, Texas 57. The next highest number of first place votes went to Ole Miss with 6. Texas A&M got 5, Alabama 3, Oklahoma and LSU 2 each, and then Kentucky 1. So I mean, people laughed at the Vandy pick a year ago. Vandy was pretty darn good. So
yeah.
Maybe that voter is just way ahead of the curve and has more inside info and knows what to expect from Will Stein and that Kentucky team this year. Anyway,
yeah.
we're just underway here on the Friday edition of The Drive. We're less than 2 weeks away now from the start of fall football practice here at Auburn. Love to get your thoughts from those of you who watched and listened to SEC Football Media Days. Again, if you're not positive at this time of year, I feel sorry for you and your team.
Yeah.
Because a lot of folks are realistic. That doesn't mean that everybody is expecting to win a championship, but everyone is hoping that things work out well. That if they're picked low, that they've got some dark horses, they've got some things that can work in their favor. And look, every year there's a team or two that comes out of just almost nowhere and makes a big push.
Yeah, every year you have a surprise and a Cinderella story. Like, look at Indiana last year. We knew they were going to be good. But 2 years ago they were unheard of.
Well, 2 years ago they were awful.
Right.
And then they won 11, and then they won the national championship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there were a lot of people that doubted. I did. I doubted.
Me too.
I doubted them all the way in and through the postseason, thinking, all right, reality's going to hit. Who have they played? Well, all they did was go out and beat everybody.
Yeah, I was the same way. I just didn't trust them, and they proved me wrong.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, we will we'll go in whatever direction you want. I do want to see if I can pull up. I know Jackson Coivin was playing really
well.
He's
doing great.
Yeah.
He's 10 under, I believe.
He was 10 under last time.
That's unbelievable.
Last time we got a look and was in the top five.
Wow.
So we will we'll see if we can keep that updated as well. And anything else? I mean, LeBron to the Sixers.
Yeah,
that was not just a little surprise. I mean, I think a lot of folks were thinking, is he going back to Cleveland?
Right.
You know, where is he going to head? I mean, as Charles Barkley said, you know, what ties does he have to Philly now? The Sixers are going to be they're going to be one of, if not the favorites in the East this next year.
Some
now,
good players coming back.
Oh yeah, no question about that.
Yeah,
but that's one of the bigger stories going on, and we're a little over a week away from the Major League Baseball trading deadline too. So the talk there is heating up more and more as everybody seems to be looking for pitching.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we've got quite a few things we can talk about. Yes, we will run down the full SEC predicted order of finish, the preseason all-conference teams. Love to get your thoughts on that. Where do you see that the media was right? Where do you say, these guys have lost their minds? because that's usually the case anyway. I mean,
right.
The predictions usually aren't very good. But
yeah.
We'll do that and much more. We've got plenty of audio that we can run as well. But we'd love to hear from you as we're just underway here on the Friday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with 27502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday edition of The Drive. Bill, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Got Drew at the controls as we're wide open. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise on this Friday? Yeah, we were looking at the scores there in the 3M Open in Minnesota, where Jackson Coivin is shot a 3-under today to go 10-under and is tied for third.
Wow.
After a first-round 64, then he shot a 68 today. Michael Kim shot a 59 today, and he is 14-under. Ben Coles with a 62 in the first round. Unbelievable scores here. And then a 69 today is 11-under, and then Jackson tied with Troy Merritt at 10-under for the third spot. All those guys are in the clubhouse. Let's see. There are a couple of other guys. Scottie Scheffler is one stroke back through 13. He's at 9-under. So, I mean, still at the midway point. You're halfway done. You know you've made the cut.
That's unbelievable.
You're heading to the weekend, and you're a stroke ahead of Scottie Scheffler, even though he's still out on the course right now. That's pretty darn good for your I guess this is his second professional tournament.
Yeah,
so,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's
good for him.
That is amazing. Yeah, he is a tremendous he is a tremendous player.
Wow, so, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Bill, I was going to bring this up. What about all these people getting let go at ESPN? That's just crazy.
Well, I guess you know, if they're going to have to keep paying out so much for the rights to games.
Right,
Maybe they're going to have more and more people just doing it from home and not going on the road. I don't know. I mean, obviously they're cutting a lot.
Wow.
Cutting a lot of salaries.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean I wonder, are there going to be things, is there going to be more replays, or are some of the folks that have been doing things that are still there, they're going to ask them to do two or three times as much as they've been doing?
Yeah.
I guess for what some of these guys are getting paid,
yeah.
I could probably force myself to
another hour
to work a few more hours a day for the six figures that figures that some of these guys are getting.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Time of year, too, right before football. So.
Well, that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Yeah,
so it
crazy. But, I saw that again today. Some more of them got let go.
Yeah, I just and I haven't seen that they're hiring. I mean, maybe they're going to go out and have some other big hires. I mean, you know, because that's what I wondered is just how are they going to be able to have as much content if they don't have as many people trying to produce it?
Right. So yeah, be interesting.
Oh yeah, yeah. Don, love to get your thoughts. Just again, Media Days is great. It's for TV. It's really a made for TV event now.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was on 24/7
for the interviews and everything.
Sirius Radio all day.
But I mean, I said it yesterday, and love to get your thoughts. I mean, I didn't see anybody that I thought, was cringe worthy or anything like that. I thought all the coaches did a pretty good job handling themselves there and in front of the media, in front of the cameras, and representing their schools pretty well. As a matter of fact, it was sort of capped off by Lane Kiffin being a little a little apologetic, mm-hmm. and looking like he's trying to mend some of the bridges there before I guess before his team makes that trip early this season to Oxford.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like you. I didn't think there wasn't anything that just stood out. I thought everybody did a good job. I thought all the players represented themselves and their schools very well. But like you said, it is for the fans. It's for the media. It's for TV. And it really doesn't mean anything. I hate to say that, but it just tells me we're getting a lot closer to practice starting, you know, after media days. There's probably – and as a coach, these next two weekends I worried – myself sick.
Oh yeah,
because a lot of these kids will get to go home for the last weekend.
This will be this will be as big a break as they've had.
And you do not want phone calls, and you just hope they get home safe and they get back safe and they stay out of trouble. But yeah, it's kind of a nerve wracking time for coaches when you take that little break right before practice starts.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to think. All right, let's see. I can pull up the SEC schedule. Is anybody in SEC got that
early game? Zero.
Week zero game?
I don't think so.
My computer is just restarting, and I didn't think so either. Because if so, no, there's nobody listed. Nobody listed before the opening weekend of the 5th. The earliest game would be Missouri's got a game on Thursday night, September the 3rd. Mm-hmm. So they'll get to start a little early. But, you know, a lot of times there could be a team or so that plays in week zero and they get to start practice, you know, in the next week or so.
Right. You got UNC and TCU on the 29th.
Mm-hmm. That's week zero.
Yeah,
that's
North Carolina State and Virginia, those are –
Conference games,
right on the 29th of August.
Wow.
Mm.
So they'll be getting started with practice, this next week mm-hmm. at some point because Auburn's gonna officially start on that Wednesday the 5th.
Florida State plays on the 29th too. New Mexico State.
So man, you got a lot of ACC teams. Five ACC teams playing on the 29th.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. But
Hawaii and Stanford. Yeah, there's quite a few games on the 29th.
Yeah, I knew there were a lot of week zero games, but there aren't any. I didn't think there were any games involving SEC teams.
No, I don't see any.
Yeah, so the first game involving an SEC team's Thursday night, the 3rd, Missouri and Arkansas Pine Bluff, and then on Friday, this is a Friday game. Funny, Oklahoma opens its season against UTEP on Friday, September 4th.
Right.
Why do you want to be playing on a Friday night in September?
I have no idea.
That's not TV.
UTEP.
That's not, you know.
I just hate Friday night games, you know.
Because of high school.
Yeah, it's just I don't like it, but. Money talks, as we were talking earlier.
Yeah, but I mean, I wonder. I mean, it doesn't seem like you'd have as big a crowd on a Friday night either.
Against UTEP.
Yeah. All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it, and Terry gets us started. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Coach. How y'all doing?
Great.
Good. Just curious, what names will I go to ESPN? You comment on a coach, because, you know, they're bringing back the Golics. On the 3rd. And
right. They're coming back on radio, right.
To the ESPN radio. So they're making changes?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know they let go Carl Ravitch the other day, and Cam, who's who's had a job there with ESPN, was let go. Let's see, Ryan Clark is gone. David Lloyd. I'm just looking for some notes.
Couple of ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well, it's money. That's the bottom line.
Oh, it is. Let's see.
Bottom line.
Ryan Clark. I'm just looking. I think Yahoo's
demanding 6 and 7 figure salaries. You don't have to wonder.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. Yes. All right, let's see. Here we go. Here's the list, according to Yahoo: Ryan Clark, Carl Ravitch, Tom Pelissero, David Lloyd, Stefania Bell, Charles Davis, Bart Scott, Andreas Hale, and I believe that's what they have right now. And it says, but they're not expected to be the last.
So there's going to be big changes to ESPN Radio, I would think.
I would guess so. That's what I was wondering. Are folks going to do longer shifts? Are they maybe not going to fill all 24 hours because more and more stations that carry ESPN have their own shows at different times? That's a good question. I'm wondering about that myself.
And like I said before, they're bringing back the Golics. Mike Golic and his son on the third, and moving Matt and Myron to the ESPN lineup. So they're making changes all over. I thought there might be some changes to the morning show even.
Yeah.
You didn't comment on that.
There's no telling, and I'm sure everybody's nervous if they haven't been guaranteed that they're back. I'm sure there are a lot of folks that are having trouble sleeping at night.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys are an ESPN affiliate, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Interesting. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Right, y'all take care.
Appreciate it, Terry. Yeah, I mean, and I'm trying to see if there have been – this cost-cutting is pretty much all it is. But again, what do you do, and how do you fill those voids?
Yeah. Like you said, somebody's going to have to pick up the slack, do extra, or maybe –
Or I really do wonder if instead, of covering 24 hours the way they have, if they just cover 20 or something like that, that'd be a way they could do it and just say you can plug your show in and run the other shows at different times or things like that. I'm not really sure. But, I mean, a lot of the, some analysts and things like that are being let go as well. Mm-hmm. So, and you've got to have – I would think you have to have somebody – I mean, because folks can't be doing two games at a time.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So I really don't know, but it's time. I mean, if you're going to do it, you need to do it now before lineups are started being set and before you know when all the ball games are and things like that.
Right.
I heard McElroy and Cole talking about some of the places where they're going. And,
I guess they've at least got their first games locked up.
Yeah, so I mean,
I don't know how far out they know where they're going.
They generally, a lot of times they don't. I mean, they may know a specific game that's down the road, but for a lot of the week by week when games aren't selected for certain slots yet, certain times, then, no, the guys are just sort of waiting to find out what games at what time and where they're going to be sent.
Right.
That can be pretty tough. I mean, look, they get compensated.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's still – you think about not knowing at least, when you're coaching or playing, at least who you're playing.
Right.
And where it's going to be.
Right.
You may not know what time.
Exactly.
But you know where you're going to be and who you're going to be playing.
Right.
I mean, it is crazy, and it's nowhere near as difficult to be a broadcaster and do that. But still, it's tough to think about. You don't know who you're going to be doing in a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden, you better do a lot of prep.
Yeah.
If you haven't really studied that team, you better get to work on it because you're going to have to go, and you might. You might have a situation family-wise or something coming up, and all of a sudden, hey, no, you've got to be across country tomorrow.
Yeah, you're right. And if a lot of prep time, a lot of late nights studying, and you're right. But I just wondered how far out they know. But I haven't seen a TV schedule yet.
I mean, about the only thing a lot of them know is who they're paired with.
Right.
They know who the team mm-hmm. is. But yeah. Yeah, interesting point and question there, Terry. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We're a quarter of the way in. When we come back, we'll go ahead and look at the preseason predictions by the SEC media for the order of finish and for the all-conference teams. Then we'd love to get your thoughts on that. Who do you think was left out that should be on? Who are you a little surprised maybe that's on there or is picked as high as they are? So. We'll do that when we come back. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And yes, the SEC today releasing the media's voting results for predicted order of finish, for all conference. We went over the first place ballots, and you realize one first place ballot, I said Alabama got three. That's probably the fewest first place ballots I can recall in my 30-something years, 40-something years of seeing SEC mm-hmm. media predict the order of finish. That's got to be the fewest first place votes I've ever seen Alabama get. But they got one more than Oklahoma, and that's the only reason Alabama was picked sixth ahead of Oklahoma.
Wow.
Sixth. Now, again, it's a 16-team league.
Right.
And when, you know, when we first got going, the SEC was a 10-team league. Mm-hmm. When I first started following, you know, working actually for the media, you know, covering Auburn and talking about Auburn and going to ball games as a member of the media, there were 10 teams. So, I mean, Alabama sure wasn't going to be picked there, but that would be like Alabama being picked fourth or fifth,
mm-hmm.
which was unheard of
yeah.
back then.
Yes.
But yes, Georgia, your preseason pick by just 70 points over Texas. No question. Those are your top two, and I knew that going in.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss picked third.
Wow.
I mean, that has an awful lot to do with Trinidad Chambliss.
Yes.
Your preseason all-conference quarterback who, I mean, spectacular playmaker a year ago. He was able to turn so many plays that looked like they're going to be big losses
yeah.
into big gains.
Right.
So we will see. I mean, so Pete Golding and Ole Miss picked third. Texas A&M is your preseason number four team in the conference. LSU with Lane Kiffin going in and now one of, if not the highest paid quarterbacks in the SEC, and Sam Levitt is preseason number five. And actually 4, 5, 6, and 7, Texas A&M, LSU, Alabama, and Oklahoma, those four schools were separated by 53 total points in voting. When we're talking about thousands of points
right.
being you know, totaled, that's how close 4, 5, 6, and 7 were. But Alabama was picked sixth, and that is the lowest we've seen Alabama pick. So the SEC media, at least the ones down in Tampa, don't think it's going to be a banner year for SEC schools from the state of Alabama.
Yeah.
If Alabama is sixth in the conference and Auburn's 12th, neither fan base is going to be very excited by the end of the year.
Yeah.
All right. So Oklahoma was 7. Then it's a good drop back. 600 points. Like I said, 53 points separating 4th and 7th. Then a 600 point drop back to Tennessee at 8. Florida is picked 9th. And as I said, by far the highest of any of the first-year coaches. I mean, I'm not including Lane. Lane's a first-year coach at LSU, but he's not a first-year SEC coach.
Right.
So John Sumrall in Florida, and I think part of that has to do with the fact that a lot of folks that cover Florida were there,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of folks from Tampa are also Florida, you know, Florida people.
Right.
But Florida has talent.
You
know, Justin Ferguson and I were talking about it yesterday. And Justin said, I mean, you know, Florida has an awful lot of new players as well.
Mm-hmm.
Florida has, Florida brought in Georgia Tech's offensive coordinator, who brought in Aaron Filo, the backup quarterback at Georgia Tech this past year, who has started one game in his career.
Yeah.
And it was against Gardner Webb. And he did have a good game. He was 21 of 28 for 370-something yards and a touchdown and an interception. And on that, people are thinking, well, this Florida offense is going to be really good. We will see. But that's where, you know, that's the reason I think that Florida is ranked higher. And when we're talking about it, I mean,
yeah.
I think you have to sort of like Auburn's situation playing Florida after Florida plays Florida Atlantic and Campbell, the first two games at home. Auburn's got Baylor and Southern Miss, and then they've got Florida coming to Jordan-Hare on a Saturday night for the first road game for the Gators and the first road start ever for their quarterback.
That'll be tough.
I mean, that's
it's been a while since Florida's been here.
That's right. Oh, it has.
It'll be rocking.
And it's really a shame. It's really a shame. I mean, Auburn-Florida was a great rivalry. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ones that really got missed. Mm-hmm. That and the Tennessee. You know, those were the two rivalries we lost when you went to divisions.
Right.
And Florida, it seemed like that was we're on one of those things where it was like once a decade you feel like you're going to play Florida.
Yes.
And, there have been some great games between those two. But I said it the other day, and I'll say it again, Don, that this is a very, very big ball game for Auburn. If Florida wins that game, it is a huge, huge feather in the cap of the Gators and John Sumrall to get a road win in their very first conference game. It won't be the end of the world if they don't win it.
Right.
But it'll be much more harmful to Auburn if they lose that home conference opener.
It's a lot riding on that game for both schools, especially Auburn. Home game, night game, atmosphere is going to be out of this world. I think we got a really good shot.
We will see. I mean, this is not a terrible situation for Auburn. Look, now I did see somebody pointed out that the last 2 years Auburn's finished 14th and 13th, and Auburn has not finished. I think Nathan King wrote this earlier today, that Auburn has not finished higher than it has been picked in the SEC since 2021.
Mm.
So that means they haven't been picked high,
right?
And they haven't even finished as high as they haven't finished higher than they've been picked.
Mm.
So Auburn's hoping to break that. I mean, you sure hope that you can finish higher than 12th. Like Justin said yesterday, though, Don, I mean, if Auburn had finished ninth, and we were saying, he said he thought probably 10 to 12, if Auburn were picked ninth, last year's ninth place team was Missouri, who had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now that there are 16 teams, you can still be pretty good. I don't know about being 12th.
Right.
And expect that it's going to be pretty good. All right, but Florida's picked ninth. Missouri is picked 10th. South Carolina is picked 11th. After a terrible year, I guess folks are figuring – you know, they've got Lenoris Sellers back, and last year maybe was a fluke. We'll see. But South Carolina's picked 11th, and then Auburn. Auburn 20 points back of South Carolina. And then it's a pretty good drop, almost 200 points back to Vandy at 13th. Another 200 points back to Kentucky. I'm still amazed. Kentucky, with only 546 points, got a first-place vote.
Crazy.
Then Mississippi State and Arkansas only 262 points. I mean, compared to 10 times as many points for Georgia. So I mean, Ryan Silverfield is facing quite the challenge there at Arkansas. Look, I think Silverfield did a heck of a job at Memphis,
right?
Taking over from Mike Norvell. He kept things going, and he pointed out and had one of his members of the media point out that he's 5-1 against SEC, current SEC coaches. That would be Alex Golish and John Sumrall.
But
Memphis had a pretty good program going. And the other thing that I heard is like, well, look, Alex Golish was only He was only the third best of the three new coaches from the AAC.
Mm-hmm.
But look at what he took over.
Yeah.
I mean, he took over a program at South Florida that had been terrible. They'd won three ball games in the 2 years before he got there.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up winning 23 games in 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned that Ryan Silverfield took over a program that was used to winning double digits games a year in Memphis from Mike Norvell, mm-hmm. who obviously then went to Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
And John Sumrall took over a program that Willie Fritz had been National Coach of the Year,
right,
coaching at Tulane. So both those guys took over programs that had been turned around,
right,
and were winning.
Right. Yeah. Established. And yeah, that's interesting. But all that stuff is just, you know, like you said, it's just the talk.
Yeah. Well,
and,
I mean,
and
but,
get ready for the
but,
season.
But that's where, that's where you can see where a lot of the thinking,
right,
that goes into it. If you're somebody, right, who isn't close to one of those schools, you go, well,
right,
yeah, you're right. He didn't win as many games as the other two,
exactly,
guys. Why should he win a lot at a place that hasn't been winning over the last 5 years?
Right.
Well, one of the things is you look and how well Alex Gullish turned South Florida around. Mm-hmm. You would feel like he has he's been involved. And look, when he got to Tennessee, he and Josh Heupel got to Tennessee. They'd been down. They'd been,
yes,
struggling. And so he's been part of a couple of programs that have been able to get back on track. And that's what Auburn,
right,
is looking for. That's what they're wanting. And that's, mm-hmm, one of the things Alex Gullish said, you know, down in Tampa, is when he was asked about goals, he said, I don't have, mm-hmm, specific numbers in mind. It's got to be, you know, at the end of the year, have we established an identity? Are we moving in the right direction? Have we made that step that everyone's been hoping to see?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like we talked, I think it was Tuesday when he was on, I like the fact that he didn't give a bunch of goals and we got to win these many games, blah, blah, blah. He wants to get better each day, every day, and see improvement.
Yeah, you don't need a situation like Texas A&M already,
yeah,
had the national championship,
yeah,
trophy and,
yeah,
ready to put the year on it for,
yeah,
Jimbo.
Yeah, crazy. People are crazy.
Well, I mean, yeah, when you've got that kind of money though and resources,
all those people coming back, they had some players.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened.
And that's the thing. I don't know that I wouldn't even with Trinidad Chambliss being at Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'd had Texas A&M behind Ole Miss.
Yeah, right. I don't either.
A&M's loaded. They've got a pretty darn good quarterback in Marcel Reed.
Right, and they got tons of money, like you said, and they got good players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that guy's a good coach.
Oh, Mike Elko, no question,
yeah,
about it.
And I'm surprised Ole Miss was ranked ahead of them.
So
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and because I think nationally – the perception is going to be LSU's better than Ole Miss. I mean, now LSU's program historically,
mm-hmm,
is,
mm-hmm,
better than Ole Miss. But that's sort of a surprise to me to see Ole Miss picked ahead of LSU,
yeah,
in the SEC predictions.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder who's going to be favored in Oxford. I still think it might be tough.
It's going
to
be interesting
to have LSU as an underdog.
Yeah, you know. Ole Miss opens against Louisville on a Sunday night, September the 6th. Then they have Charlotte and then LSU. So that'll be interesting.
Hey, LSU opens against Clemson.
I know.
God. Yeah. All right.
So we'll know something after that first game.
You are not kidding. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Sky Bar. Let's go ahead and get to it before we get to our final break. And Pat is up first. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. You never guess who I just got a phone call from. Remember Turtle?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he just told me, he just called me, said he's from, she's in Chile right now playing overseas. But he called me because I'd mentioned to him that he should, you know, try to get an extra year back,
yeah,
in the day.
Yeah, Keyshawn Hall did.
Yeah.
He just told me Keyshawn Hall did, and I was going to, that's what my first question was, did y'all know that?
I saw earlier today that there's like 45 players that are petitioning. Keyshawn, one of the first ones to get approved. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm disappointed. I mean, not for Keyshawn, but it's, you know, I'm glad the NCAA went with a 5 for 5. And look, things have to start somewhere. I mean, right. I understand why they tried to do it, but, hey, there are going to be plenty more. I wonder if there are going to be some football players that try to get it. And I just wonder where they'll wind up. There's probably a school or two that's desperate for a player that would love to have one.
Yeah, well, I didn't understand why they didn't just grandfather in the people that were, that had one more year and just let it be done. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, it would have been a whole lot simpler. Generally, in the past, when they've done that, they have said, but I guess it's by the time they did it, though, Pat, that's probably the reason is kids had graduated, had, you know, some of them had stopped working out. If they felt like that was it, they weren't going to try to, you know, get in game shape for the next season. So I guess that's why they did it. But no, you're right. Why not go ahead and just, it would have been a whole lot simpler than having to deal with more and more lawsuits.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's exactly right, because you just had to know that people were going to do it. And then you, now you don't look like you did something wrong, because if everybody gets all their, you know, appeals, then it makes it look like they did it wrong. So it just seems like they just...
Why would somebody not now? Once a judge has ruled for some, I don't see any reason why any of them that have only played 4 years, have only been out, you know, out of high school for 4 years, shouldn't get a fifth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why I told him, I said I'd call my lawyer and try to help him out, because he's an Auburn guy. So, you know, I mean, no reason why he should get, you know, left out.
No, you're right.
What's fair is fair. Only problem for him is he's 24, he just told me. So he's going to be testing that one. Mm-hmm. That's what he's going to have to test. I don't know how old Keyshawn Hall was.
Keyshawn's not. I think Keyshawn's 22.
Okay, yeah. So, but even that, you know, 24 versus 25. I mean, it just seems arbitrary. You know, I get it, but
yeah. But the thing is, at least that's going to be tougher since it was agreed upon by all the schools that okay, they'd go with the 5 for 5 and 24. I can see where anybody that's got that year. When did he turn 24?
Exactly.
That may be the key there.
Yeah, exactly. If he turned it before they did that thing. Yeah. But anyway, I just thought that was funny. He just called me out of the blue and I was just like, hey.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That was something I had down and had forgotten to mention here early on.
Yeah, he sent me a couple pictures of Chile. I see some pictures. You're down there traveling the world. That's pretty cool. At least you get to do that. But
yeah.
But anyway, all right. Well, that sounds great. Well, y'all have a great weekend, War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Pat. Yeah, I'm glad Pat did mention that. I'd seen that a little earlier today. That Keyshawn among the players. There was a handful of players that got it, but I see I believe something like 45 players have already petitioned with different judges, and I would imagine that the floodgate is now open.
Yeah.
Now, they're sure. What's interesting is they're all basketball players, to my knowledge, right now. So that's why I wonder. I mean, I'm sure there's a football player or two that either wasn't drafted or, you know, was hoping they'd get an opportunity. Maybe even somebody that's been cut.
Yeah.
By an NFL team. Did you see Pavia? Diego Pavia got cut.
Yeah, what a nut.
I mean, look, he's a great college player.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean and I sure don't hold it against anybody that you're not a great NFL prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Because look, at this level, at the college level, it's about winning college games.
Right.
The most important thing is not producing NFL players, although it's great if you can.
Right.
Because that'll help you in recruiting, it'll help everything.
Yep.
But you can't worry about having NFL prospects more than you do about winning your college games.
Exactly.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us here on the Friday edition of The Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final minute or so here of hour number one. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. We took a look at the preseason projected order of finish for the SEC. Auburn predicted 12th, Alabama 6th. And I guarantee you both fan bases are hoping that that is way, way off for each of them.
Right, right, no doubt. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. And like you said, Bill, that hadn't happened in a long time.
No, no. All right, we will. We'll take a look at the preseason all-conference teams and more. And love to hear from you. Anything on your mind sports-wise in hour number two of The Drive, which is coming up.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two here on the Friday edition. Everybody doing well? Looked like it was going to rain, did it?
Yeah.
I heard the guys, heard Christian and Tripp talking about maybe it rained here for a little bit or something. It didn't rain at my house.
Nope, not at mine.
It got cloudy. The wind blew for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but it never rained there.
And, right.
So I mean,
8% chance. It says
eight.
Eight.
Okay. I got to go home in the water.
Yep. Yep.
Great. Great.
And next week, Bill, get ready.
Is there any chance of rain next week? I've seen that the temperatures
53% are 53% Saturday.
And Saturday. That's great.
And
that's
then
great.
Sunday, 90 is a high.
That's cool for what I think it's going to be.
Monday, 94.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, 96. And then I think it just keeps going up the whole time. 96. Wow. Wednesday, 93. 93, 91, 90, all the way through next Sunday a week. And not a lot of rain chances.
Well, I mean, it is the last week of July.
Yeah, it's so, summer in Alabama.
Yeah, so let's, I mean, just get ready for it, folks. Hope your ACs hold up, because that's the thing. This is the worst. This is when it happens, and it's understandable why, because they get worked harder than ever. Because it's not just, I mean, here, Ben, we how many times have you heard this? It's not just the heat. It's the humidity, though, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you feel like you need it cooler when it's, I mean, if it's 80 degrees and not humid, it's tolerable. I don't love it, but it's tolerable. But I mean, when the when the humidity is as high as it gets here in the summertime, yes, it can be awful. And that is just hope that everybody who has a system that's not brand new, is in good shape.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. Fingers crossed. All right, we were talking in hour number one. SEC Media Days wrapped up yesterday. Today we got the predictions for the order of finish and the preseason all conference. Ran down the predicted order of finish. Georgia picked to win the conference to beat Texas in the SEC championship game, followed by Ole Miss, then Texas A&M, LSU, Alabama 6th, Oklahoma, and Tennessee rounding out the upper half. Florida was picked 9th, followed by Missouri, South Carolina, Auburn 12th, then Vandy, Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. So not surprising, a little disappointing, but I mean, it is what it is, and this doesn't mean anything except—
Not a thing.
All right, look, they don't think you're going to be very good.
Right, let's use it as motivation.
A little more incentive to get out there.
Right. Definitely would use it as motivation. I'm sure they will. You know, kids know everything now. You can't hide anything. They probably knew it before we did what the rankings were. And, again, it means nothing. Just go out and take care and get ready for Baylor and take one game at a time and just keep getting better.
And that'll start in less than 2 weeks.
Unbelievable.
We're 12 days away from the first day of practice. 11 days from now on April the 4th, Tuesday, April 4th, will be Auburn's official report day. even though all the players are here.
Oh yeah.
But they'll all be there. They'll probably get physicals, and then they'll go ahead and weigh them so that we'll have the weights for probably for opening game.
Yeah.
For the opening game.
I would think so.
And then practice will start on the 5th. Looking forward to that. We were very grateful to get the opportunities that we had in the spring to be able to watch practice. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll have more of the same here this fall. Don't know when practices are going to be.
No.
I wouldn't be surprised if they kept them in the mornings. That's you can get more done. I mean, now you can be, if you want to be really brutal, you do it starting mid-afternoon.
Yeah.
And now Alex Golish did say that they're not going to take it easy. They want to find out who is ready,
right,
and who they can count on come this fall. So we'll find out, I guess, right around that Tuesday or Wednesday, what the practice schedule is going to be. But looking forward to that.
Yeah.
3-3-4. Go ahead, Don.
Right,
what you got?
Around the corner, the morning practice, we did it, our last couple of years, we mm-hmm. went to 2 days a week in the morning. At first, I was old school. Oh, man, you can't go in the morning, blah, blah, blah. But I kind of liked it. And it does give you some more time to prepare. And with the heat and stuff, it's better.
I think some of the players that we've talked to and coaches over the years, they also feel like the players, you get once everybody's awake. I mean, it's not like they're out there at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
But I mean, once they're out there, it's a little easier on the legs, and then they've got the rest of the day.
They have a long time to recover.
That's exactly right.
And there's no true two-a-days anymore. So you're going to have plenty of time to recover, which I think is great.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And Brett is up first this hour. Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. I was wondering, Coach Dunn, did you get to see the defensive line, specifically the nose guards and tackles, practice any in the spring?
I did not. Like Bill said, they were going in the morning, and, I work all night at Countries. So I'm going to try to work that out to get over there for sure in the fall. But I saw a lot of tape. I was lucky enough. One of our former guys at McIntyre.
Mm-hmm. Jarris?
Yeah, he would put some drill stuff on there. And I was lucky enough to see that. But I did not see them in person. But I look forward to this getting over there this fall, trying to work it out.
Okay. Well, tell me what you think of how Dallas Walker played last year.
Well, pretty well. Bill probably knows more about that than I do.
I thought actually he played better than folks expected coming in. I think people thought he was just a situational short yardage guy. He had a little more explosion than I thought some people had, and he really worked. He really worked to try to get himself into a little bit better shape.
Yeah,
and I think it was really big to be able to get him back. He's a guy that took on a leadership role there on the defensive front. He made some plays last year, but there are a couple. The young guys, that's one of the things we were talking about a little yesterday and over the last couple of days there on the defensive front. Guys like Jordan Crawford, Malik Autry, Darian Smith, those guys were freshmen who I thought, showed – They showed some signs last year of being players as true freshmen. And, Don, usually that biggest step is made from that freshman to the sophomore year.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, they grow, they mature. And like you said, they get comfortable in their own skin being at that level.
How about, how big is it Walter Mathis, the guy from LSU, how big he's gotten? Because he played at about 285 last year. I would think he'd be in the 290s now.
He should be now. I don't know that we were talking about them showing up and then
the
getting
weights.
Weighed.
The new weights.
I don't know that Auburn has updated the weights. He was listed at 290 at spring game. So yeah, I would expect he's probably added a little to that.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Y'all have a great weekend.
And
thank you.
There's no question. I mean, the defensive line is going to be very, very important because
right.
I love the back seven.
Yeah.
Especially the linebackers and the safeties. And I think there's a lot of talent at corner. You've only got two guys with experience in Rayshon Pleasant and Andre Jordan. But, I mean, you've got, I think, as good a linebacker room as I can remember at Auburn, just with athletic ability and speed.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. And so if the defensive front, and there's potential there, you know, Walter Mathis is a young guy who played at LSU, as mm-hmm. as Brett was saying. I think he's got three years of eligibility at least.
Yeah.
Keep forgetting this 5 for 5. He may have 4 now.
Mm-hmm.
Because he played, he was 1 year at LSU. So he's got, you know, up to 4 years
right.
of eligibility left. And he's a guy that was a top 50
mm-hmm.
national prospect
yeah.
Out of high school. So he's somebody, and I mentioned a couple of others. So that's 4 sophomores
mm-hmm.
that have a chance of playing there, and that's just interior guys
mm-hmm.
that we're talking about. So
yeah, that's a good group to have.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, they'll make a big jump from that freshman year to their sophomore year.
Yeah. So that'll be
interesting.
That's the position to watch if they, and then of course if you can get the pass rush.
Yes.
Now, you know, we saw where Deshaun Womack, Alex Golish said that, you know, Auburn has handled the situation with him internally.
Right.
But he's got a court date coming up, I believe the 13th of August, I believe, is the court date. So they've got to wait for that to see exactly what his situation will be. But you've got Jared Smith. You've got Chris Murray back
mm-hmm.
There. The guys that you know, Auburn would like to see as pass rushers, not counting if they use one of the linebackers or DeMarcus Riddick or somebody like that
right.
to try to put pressure on the quarterback as well. So
right.
That's probably the biggest question on defense is there up front.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little more of a concern about the pass rush
mm-hmm.
than I do the interior right. now.
Yeah, got to get that pass rush. And there's some things they can do, like you said, Bill. They might be able to make like a hybrid rush end or a rusher or whatever you want to call it, edge guy, you know, moving your linebackers and some of your larger safeties.
Mm-hmm.
But, that'll be a good battle to watch during the preseason as the interior guys.
And then I didn't even mention the guy who was the star of the spring, Cody Sigler. The
yeah.
transfer from Arkansas State started.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has worked his way from Division II to group of six
yeah.
to the SEC, and everybody raved about him all spring
yep.
long about
yep.
his leadership, his worth ethic, but his ability. I mean, he's a guy that and in the spring, he was listed 6'2", 308.
Yeah. Those guys, you like those guys that their motor runs and they love football and they're hungry. You know, like I said, he wasn't given a silver spoon right out of high school and he's had to earn it. And I always liked those guys, you know, the ones that maybe weren't the top recruits, but have the work ethic, the motor, and the character.
Yeah, I mean, he's an Alabama native. Started his career at West Alabama.
Yep.
Then he goes to Arkansas State, and now here he is. And
he got a little better each time.
Pushing for a starting job in the SEC.
Yeah, a little better food, better buses.
Oh, yeah, you know it.
Now he's big time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he and as a nose at Arkansas State last year, he had 7 tackles for loss and 5 sacks.
Yeah, that's good for a nose guard because you're getting double teamed most of the time.
Oh, yeah. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number 2. We'll run down the SEC media's predictions for all conference when we come back. But we'd love to hear from you, anything on your mind, sports-wise, as we continue with the Friday Drive.
War Eagle, this is 106.7.
Welcome back into the Friday edition of The Drive. Oh, gee, hearing Butch there, I
yeah.
saw just a little note that apparently Ike Irish is out for the season. Suffered an injury there. One of the top prospects. I mean, played in the played in the minor league All Star game there around the All Star break. I think gonna be a really. I mean, he's a really good hitter. But I mean, I think his chance he's gonna have a good major league career as well. But
that's too bad.
I've got to check and see exactly what the injury was there. But
I didn't see that.
That's tough.
Yeah,
that
tough
is tough. Deal. All right. Mentioned the we have not gotten through the entire. I think all we talked about was quarterback.
Right.
And Auburn's representatives on the media's preseason all conference teams. So let's take a look at them. Here's your first team all conference by the media, and again they got a lot wrong last year. the preseason first team quarterback is Trinidad Chambliss of Ole Miss. The running backs are Kewon Lacy of Ole Miss and Ahmad Hardy of Missouri. Is Ahmad Hardy going to be able to play? It's interesting. Missouri brought another running back with them to media days, and Ahmad Hardy, you know, was involved. I mean, he got shot in the off season, and I know that Eli Drinkwitz says, you know, he's made great progress and he's trying to work his way back, but. I don't know that he's going to be anywhere near 100%. Well, when he is an outstanding
running back. Yeah, but I haven't heard anything about his condition.
Yeah. The receivers, a couple of familiar names. Yep. Your first team all SEC receivers are Cam Coleman of Texas and Ryan Coleman Williams of Alabama. Remember they were two of the Freeze Five.
Yep. That's
Ryan amazing. Committed to Auburn and then flipped to Alabama, and then
right.
Cam, of course,
left
signing with Texas this past year, this past offseason. The tight end is Tre'Davious Green of LSU. The guards, the outside offensive lineman, they list guard and tackle, and then center. Used to, you only voted for five offensive linemen, and there were quite a few times when there was no true center
right
on the All SEC team. So this year, you had to vote for two guards, two tackles, and a center. So the guards and tackles, because I'm not sure that they're two guards and two tackles. Mm-hmm. But the outside guys on the offensive line are Trevor Goosby of Texas, Caden Green of Missouri, Jordan Seaton of LSU, and Ernest Green III of Georgia. Seaton, by the way, is a guy that I heard earlier today is one of eight players in college football who's going to be making more than LeBron James is this year for the 76ers. LeBron signing a two-year, $8 million deal, so just $4 million a year. Just $4 million, Don. How's he going to survive?
I don't know.
I mean, I feel bad. You know, you got to be worrying about where the next meal's coming from when you're only making $4 million. I mean, yeah, we can really relate.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Seaton is the only offensive lineman on that list. So LSU paid him over $4 million to come in and be their left tackle.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, those are the outside guys. The center, another familiar name, your first team All-SEC center is Drew Bobo of Georgia.
Yep.
Played, of course, at Auburn High when his dad was,
was
the offensive coordinator.
Yep, Mike.
Yep. And then the all-purpose player is Mario Craver of Texas A&M. Now, yeah, he's an outstanding kick returner.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's look at the second team. Second team offense, Arch Manning of Texas is a quarterback. The running backs are Jaden Ball of Florida and Nate Frazier of Georgia. Of course, if you heard us earlier, you know who were Auburn's representatives, and you know who is on and who's not on this list. The receivers, Mario Craver, we just mentioned from Texas A&M. He's a first-team all-purpose, second-team receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah Satania of Oklahoma is the other receiver. And Lawson Lucky of Georgia is the tight end. The outside offensive lineman, Dontrell Glover of Georgia, Michael Fasusi of Oklahoma, Michael Carroll of Alabama, and Lance Hurd of Kentucky. And the second team center is Mark Nabo Jr. of Texas A&M. while the all-purpose player is Ryan Niblett of Texas. And then your third team offense, again, this is by the media, quarterbacks Gunnar Stockton of Georgia, the running backs Deshaun Bishop of Tennessee and Hollywood Smothers of Texas. Now, Jeremiah Cobb ran for 900-something yards last year.
Yes.
And Auburn's going to run the blank out of the ball this year. So, I mean, there's a little incentive. Maybe some people are thinking Auburn's got too many running backs. They'll spread it out and nobody will have a lot of yards. I would say if nobody at Auburn, if Auburn doesn't have a back that has 900 yards, Auburn's not going to be running the blank out of the ball.
Right.
So, so there's a little incentive for
motivation.
Bulletin
board material. Yeah,
for Jeremiah Cobb. The tight end on the third team is Willie Rodriguez of Kentucky. And then the offensive linemen are David Sanders and Wendell Moe of Tennessee and Patrick Kutis and Brandon Baker of Texas. So as I look through here, I see Texas has three offensive linemen on the first three teams.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia has two offensive linemen on the first three teams. And then nobody else has more than one. The third team center is Braylon Moore of LSU, and the all-purpose player is Jaden Baugh of Florida. I would say that another player who's got a little incentive is Rashawn Pleasant of Auburn, who year before last was an All-American kick returner, and now he's not even being considered for third team all conference. But the media, again, it's all who they saw or who they know.
They hear.
Who they know already
right.
or who they saw there at Media Days.
Right. They don't have a clue.
All right. So there are your first three teams offensively. Defensively, so Auburn has no one on any of the first three offenses. If Alex Golish and this offense don't have anybody who makes any of the first three teams on offense, then Auburn fans are going to be going, crap, we're just the way we've been, because Auburn's offense has been offensive over the last few years. But Alex Golish, as Justin Ferguson said yesterday, I mean, Alex Golish's offenses have been among the more prolific offenses in the nation.
Right.
Ever since he's been a head coach.
Right. And then what he did at Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they led the SEC in total offense and rushing.
Yes.
When he was at Tennessee. So if Auburn does anything close to that, they'll have some guys. But that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. I mean, there's not a whole lot of pressure on them. Like, wow, where's this all SEC guy?
Right.
All right. Defensively, the defensive line, the first team all SEC defensive line is Colin Simmons of Texas, Will Eccles of Ole Miss, Dylan Stewart of South Carolina, and Prince Amoniemen of LSU. And I butchered his last name. I
can't help you.
Yeah, I know. the linebackers, Whit Weeks of LSU, Rasheem Biles of Texas, and Xavier Atkins. So
finally,
there's a guy, wasn't at Media Days, but at least is well enough known that he's a preseason first team all SEC.
Right.
And then the secondary has KJ Bolden of Georgia, Zabian Brown of Alabama, Bray Hubbard of Alabama, and Ellis Robinson of Georgia. So your secondary is all Alabama and Georgia.
Hmm.
All right, the second team defense, the defensive line is David Stone of Oklahoma, Elijah Griffin of Georgia, Taylor Wine of Oklahoma, and Quincy Rhodes of Arkansas. The linebackers, Raylan Wilson of Georgia, Suntareen Perkins of Ole Miss, and Kip Lewis of Oklahoma. And then in the secondary, there was a tie for one of the spots, and it's interesting, there was a tie between two Oklahoma players.
Huh.
Eli Bowen and Peyton Bowen tied for the fourth spot, along with Ty Benefield of LSU, DJ Pickett of LSU, and Kelly Jones of Mississippi State. And then on the third team, you had Cam Franklin of Ole Miss, DJ Hicks of Texas A&M, Gabe Harris of Georgia, and Jaden Woods of Florida are your linemen. Your linebackers, Arian Carter of Tennessee, T.J. Dottery of LSU, and Yonze Pierre of Alabama. And then the secondary, Keon Sabb of Alabama, Champ Anthony, Khalil Barnes of Georgia, and Jelani McDonald of Texas. So you see Auburn with two players on the second team, Xavier Atkins first team, right. Champ Anthony was third team. And then the specialists, the first team place kicker is Tate Sandell of Oklahoma. Lucas Carnero of Ole Miss is the second team kicker, and Alex McPherson is the third team kicker. Like I said earlier, if he's healthy, there's not a kicker around that's better than Alex McPherson. But I mean, he did get some credit. He was the only specialist there at Media Days.
Yeah.
The punters, Grant Chadwick of LSU is first team, Grayson Miller of Oklahoma second team, and Ethan Pulliam of Mississippi State third team. Return specialist, and again, of course, this is punt return. Ryan Niblett of Texas is first team, Isaiah Satania of Oklahoma second team, and Vernell Brown of Florida third team. Kickoff specialist, Tate Sandell of Oklahoma, Lucas Carnero of Ole Miss, and the third team's Terry Busry of Texas A&M. And again, Rashawn Pleasant, if he gets the opportunity to do that. Now, we're not sure if he will be, since he's going to be most likely a starting corner.
Right.
Don't know if he will be called on as much as a kickoff returner for Auburn.
Yeah.
And then the long snappers, Ben Anderson of Oklahoma's first team, Terry Dubuque of Texas second team, and Brett LeBlanc of Missouri is third team. So there are your preseason all-SEC predictions. We'll see how many of those guys have banner years.
Yeah, it's always interesting to go back at the end of the year and compare.
Oh yeah. One thing we ran some audio during the week, and I mentioned Lane Kiffin was different.
Yeah,
yesterday.
Yeah, he was.
I thought if we have a chance, we'll let you hear some of that.
It's interesting.
Here in the final half hour, we'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. Love to hear from you though. We got plenty of time for you to join us. 334-321-1390. We head into the final half hour here on the Friday Drive.
02 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Got about 20 minutes or so to go. And one of the things I think everybody was looking forward to was when Lane Kiffin made his way in, the Ole Miss, you know, the Ole Miss writers were going to Terry Manuwin and see how he was going to react. And he came in a little bit different, Lane Kiffin. You know, he's talked about maturing over the last few years. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see about that. But he was a little different at Media Days. We didn't get a chance to run this yesterday, so thought we'd run some of Lane. Of course, Auburn will take on LSU. That's going to be a Saturday morning game at Jordan-Hare. Now, LSU fans hate it. Auburn fans aren't too crazy about it either.
No. I was hoping that'd be a night game.
Oh, you know it. I think everybody was.
Yeah, especially even the businesses. You know, it hurts even the – I know our guys are – you know, we'll be busy, but it won't be like a night game.
Oh, no doubt. But anyway, so here's Lane, who was the opening act yesterday on day four of Media Days.
I was head coach at Tennessee. And I just think about, you know, you can never predict the future of your life and the directions that it goes. 17 years later, third SEC job. He was the associate commissioner at the time and for Commissioner Slive. And I just have great respect for Greg and what he's done. And then I think about the 17 years and I think about how far the SEC has come since then when I first got into the conference and through his leadership. You know, leadership, especially in the public eye, is not easy. And he has a really difficult job. And I think Greg does an amazing job of communicating with us as head coaches. And we don't always agree. on his decisions, but I also understand now being around longer, and he has 16 schools to please, and fan bases, and athletic directors, head coaches, and presidents to answer to. So many times his decisions that he has to come up, and I appreciate him for the strength that he shows, is really he's just making a decision based off what he's told to do by the by the ADs and specifically by the president. So I appreciate Greg. I appreciate our friendship and, you know, kind of growing through a lot of things together throughout the different stops of coming back to the SEC. Tampa is a really special place. I think it's kind of things just happen sometimes, and flying down here, just kind of putting thoughts together, you know, that as the head coach of LSU, this being the first time on the podium at SEC Media Day and it being in Tampa for the first time, as Greg alluded to, this is a really special place, not just for my dad, but for my family. My kids, all four grandparents lived here in Tampa. This was a place that we came to every summer in great memories, and the Glaziers of the Bucks have been phenomenal to our family throughout everything, and over the last two summers of losing both parents and both having services down here in Tampa. So really great place, and really a lot of great memories here and a lot of appreciation for people here over our time in Tampa. So these 7 months at LSU have been awesome. It's been amazing, you know, to come into Baton Rouge and the state of Louisiana and the acceptance and how great they've been to my family. And the commissioner talked about, you know, to have a son, Knox, playing on campus, and every morning they practice, and then he just can walk over from practice onto campus is really special, and how the community's been to us as family and the state. You know, over 7 months, just seeing that Louisiana is built off hardworking people that are really passionate and love football. And I think that really fits in well with our staff and the values and principles that we bring into our organization, into our football program. So that's been great. And there's so many things to do in Baton Rouge and then New Orleans right up the road. It's been great for our staff and for their families, and been very appreciative of that. You know, one of the things that has really stuck out to me has been the alignment at LSU from the top down, you know, from President Roos to Virge Osborne, athletic director, to our board of supervisors. You know, that alignment has been great from the first time I met with them. And then a lot of times people, you know, schools recruit just like coaches do. And then is it that way when you get there? And it's been amazing, that alignment and commitment to building a championship program has been great. You know, one of the things at LSU in taking it was talking about, you know, the opportunities for the football players and the ability to recruit great players around the country. And one of those things is branding, that you, one of the reasons you come to LSU. We talk about it being just different. You know, this week I was meeting with our Nike rep. You know, think about how different it is for kids in NIL opportunities to come to LSU. You know, we have 12 football players that have NIL deals with Nike. No school in America has more than 8. So think about the difference of that as branding about coming to LSU as a football player. Jordan Seaton, our left tackle, has an NIL deal with Nike. There has never been an offensive lineman ever to have one in college with Nike. So, you know, that's just one of the many things when we talk about LSU being different and why it is a different place to come. And when you come, and the association with LSU and the branding that goes with that nationally has really been amazing to see. And that really goes into the blueprint of what we're building and what I said 7 months ago when I took the job. We're coming to LSU to sign the best players in the country out of high school and then mix that with the best portal players in the country and put them together. And that's led us into this roster that we have now, which is a really good mixture of that. You have some elite high school players we just signed, some of the best D linemen in America, you know, that'll be true freshmen, and then some elite portal, first round portal players coming in that combination. That roster is exciting to work with. I can't wait to get to the field, to get back to fall camp to do that. But it also excites me about the future of LSU too, not just this year. We put together a roster that can win now. But as I look at when you build the program, where it really will go to another level is how you build your depth. And that you can't necessarily build the first year, but then you can once you sign the high school players in back-to-back classes and portal players. Remember, guys, I think the portal is thought so much about like every portal player is a senior or a one-year player. That's not the case. A lot of times you sign a portal player, they may have 2-3 years of eligibility left. So then you have them in your program. Now you go into year two, you've coached them already. Maybe they didn't even, all the portal players aren't top players. You know, you build your depth through that. So they may be backups in year one, and then year two, they're your starters. So that's really exciting to me that we were able to build a roster that we can win now. And to see the success of the high school elite players coming last year, committing this year into this class, and then the portal players that we're able to sign in such a short period of time last year, and now to have a whole year leading up to that, the future is really bright and really amazing at LSU of what's to come. You know, when you take over a program, it's really exciting. You know, I'm really fortunate. Commissioner and I were talking back there, and Feinbaum, our historian of SEC, you know, gave me the stat. There's never been a head coach to have 3 SEC jobs and that were in the conference. And that's really amazing to have those opportunities and be part of that. And it's so exciting for me when you take over a new job. And I've just kind of, if you follow my life, I've built my life about pushing out of comfort. And that may not be for everybody, and that's fine. That's just how I am. And so this job has really pushed me out of comfort to take a new job, to be at LSU, like everyone talks about the pressure of LSU and what comes with that. And there's more things to be done as the head coach of LSU than anywhere I've been that are asked of me. And I've really enjoyed that, and it's been exciting to do that and to rebuild within a program, a roster, and to come in and a team come off of a 7-6 season. And then the expectations that everybody in the media has that we're supposed to be this great team right away. That's an awesome challenge. You want to talk about getting uncomfortable, that does it. You know, expectations make you uncomfortable. They make you not be able to just go through motions in any aspect of your program. So that's been awesome. And I really just can't wait to get on the field with them. You know, this has been 7 months. There's been a lot of stuff. And you have the high school, then you have the portal, and you have spring ball, and you have all the things. And to just go coach with them on the field and to put these players together and start moving the pieces around and get them developed. That's always been something I think we've done really well, and also has always been really exciting to me. When you take the pieces of a new team's new years, and if you look at our teams over the course of time, especially offensively, they look different every year because they're based off of the pieces. They don't just run the same plays and run the same systems. And that's exciting to me, to come in and get these pieces from everywhere and put them together, but you got to get on the grass to do it. And the excitement of the schedule and to coach in Tiger Stadium and have the big opener against Clemson just really every day pushes us to be the best and really is exciting, as you say, to get back there. So the three players today that we brought, that wasn't an easy choice. We had a lot of really, really good players. And, you know, we brought three players. We left Sam, our quarterback. This is an interesting time where this fell. We actually this morning had player-led practices, and so Sam was able to stay for that. And Sam's doing an amazing job. You know, these three players that we brought today I think are an interesting combination because you get a little bit of everything, to me, of what college football is now. You know, TJ coming through the portal, coming from Ole Miss to LSU, having been here a year before with another school. You never thought that happened years ago. And so to have a portal player that left a team to come to us, and then you have Witt that had a chance to go to the NFL draft. And a lot of people would have in his situation with a coaching change and having played really well. And Witt decided to stay. He wanted to see LSU return to dominance, to return to the style of play that he grew up watching, which was the reason why he came here, and he wanted to come back to make sure he was part of that. And then you have Trey Dez, of someone that in high school stayed in Louisiana, went to LSU, and now playing great, and also had a chance to go into the portal, like all kids, and decided to stay with the new staff. So I think it's you'll really enjoy these three. And again, that was a tough decision because there's a lot of household name players we could have brought today. You know, the question the commissioner mentioned there about social media and Knox. And so I think as I look back over my life, one of the things that has been great is subtracting things as you get older. And I think that's a big part of growth. If you really want to keep growing, a lot of people add things as they go versus subtracting things that are issues, whether that's diet, whether that's, in my situation, alcohol, whether that's things that are subtracted along the way, toxic relationships, things that as you grow, you decide, okay, I'm going to continue to grow. And Knox one day is like, Dad, there's no way you could get off social media. And if you know me, like, that's the best thing to do. My kids have learned that, too. If they really want something, just say, I can't do it, and I'm going to do it. And so I'm like, well, I bet I can. And it really wasn't a plan. And so I got off of all of it, and then it was still on there, and then I said, okay, I'm going to go to another level, and I just deleted the apps. And it wasn't a long-term plan. And it was really interesting to see as I went through it, because it Knox pushing me to do that, challenging me, allowed me to help other players, friends, coaches, to say, man, you should try this sometime. Because once you remove something from your life, you start to realize how many other people are addicted to it or need it. And it is interesting now. I did the 5 a.m. workout at Camp Tampa. And I watched as soon as the workout's over this morning, what does everybody do? They rush to get their phones because they got to get on there. And to be free of that has been interesting because you don't compare. Kevin Elko, who actually here in Tampa did my dad's funeral, and Kevin used to say to us years ago at Alabama, he'd say, comparisons are the thief of joy. And what I realized and what I talk to people about now is like, if you're not on anything, you don't see anything all day, you don't compare. Because now social media does what? You sit there all day long and you start to compare your job, you start to compare the city you live in, you start to compare your vacation, your kids, your clothes, your car, your significant other. And when you don't see that all day, you're free of that comparison. So it's been an interesting study. I've always, you know, made our kids, our players, you know, not have their phones in certain times, you know, like team meetings and stuff, just to get them off of them so they can learn to communicate. But it's just been interesting and a way of being more present. So I appreciate Knox challenging me on that, and it's been great.
Maybe he is growing up a little bit, but it sounds like his son has had
reeled him in.
Something to do with that. So
yeah, we'll see. Like you said,
can he stay off social media?
Bullets start flying and the pressure.
Oh yeah. Anyway, so that was interesting, but LSU picked below Ole Miss.
Yeah.
By the sports writers. So again, that is going to be some kind of homecoming in Oxford when LSU heads in.
And that's pretty early in the season.
Oh, yes, indeed it is.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get to our final break. A couple of final thoughts when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
At Reynolds, email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Winding things down here on the Friday Drive. Got a little more info on the Ike Irish injury. Baseball America posting that Ike Irish tore his left meniscus and likely will miss the rest of the 2026 season. Ike, of course, played in the Futures game, had a couple of at-bats, walked and I believe flied out, but he was hitting .286 with 16 homers for Frederick in the Orioles organization. So tough news there for Ike, but he was doing very well in his first full season in the minors.
Yeah, hopefully that's not too serious.
Oh, yeah, meniscus.
Like we were talking about, that's pretty common.
Right.
And that their season doesn't last that long anyway, does it?
No, you're right. It's usually done by the 1st of September.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, it'd just be another month, really. Yeah. And a little more on the Keyshawn Hall news. Keyshawn Hall among three Ohio players who a judge there in Ohio has granted a preliminary injunction challenging the NCAA's 5-for-5. So it was a lawsuit in Ohio gave him. So he's got an extra year of eligibility and says he's considering some top programs. Now, Auburn's got their roster. So we'll see where Keyshawn winds up. But it does also point out that 45 other players at this point are seeking the same type injunction to get that fifth year for the NCAA's 5-for-5.
Never ends, does it?
No. Never ends. They're going to have to go ahead and say, yeah, anybody who wanted, who has that fifth year, probably be able to play. What you got planned this weekend?
Nothing exciting, just sitting around. Probably do a little smoking in the oven. I'm still soft. Not going outside
It's pretty hot. You're right about that. All right. Well, we will be back on Monday. Brian Matthews will be back on his regular day on Monday. Looking forward to that. We'll get with him, and we'll just be a little over a week away from the start of football practice. So that's it. All right, everybody. Be safe. Have a great weekend. We are out of here.